The views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the hosts and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or positions of the Williams Media Group. Any content provided is of their opinion and are not intended to malign any religion, ethnic group, club, organization, company, individual, or anyone or anything.
Talk 100.9 KGWA. Good afternoon. I'm Jay Curtis. And welcome to Garden Talk. In a moment, going to be joined in studio by Mr. Rick Nelson from the Garfield County OSU Extension Office. And we're going to be talking a number of things on this July edition of Garden Talk, brought to you by The Garden House.
You want your landscaping to be beautiful, but you have no idea what plants or bushes to choose. No worries. Just stop by Garden House in Enid. You'll get the professional knowledge you need to make sure your yard is perfect. They're experts, and that's what they do. Get inspired at The Garden House.
Welcome back. Well, we're coming off a period of certainly substantial, and I'm going to go out on a limb and say above average rainfall for this period of time. And to talk about that and so much more, being joined by Rick Nelson. Good afternoon, Rick.
Afternoon, Jay Curtis.
You know, we were talking about the rainfall locally and across this area in the last week plus has certainly been plentiful.
Oh, it's just such a blessing, I guess you'd say, for us to come in after not all but the majority of the wheat harvest that's over. I would guess that 90% better or better in here in Garfield County has been or is definitely in the elevator, and that's great. And there's some other outlying areas to the north. The wheat wasn't quite as far along, and that's going to be impacted because it wasn't able to get harvested for this rain. But all in all, it's been a good wheat harvest. Those that were timely and things worked well for them, I mean, it was above average yield, above average protein. So the things are in the producer's favor in this year.
For those producers that were forced out of the field before they could go ahead and finish up, is the remaining crop lost if it doesn't dry out enough to get out there like PDQ pretty darn quick?
Well, if we can get a return to normal, sunshine, a little wind, what's going to happen? The crop that's still in the field will definitely be have a reduced test weight.
Okay, it'll be impacted.
Yeah, the quality will be impacted. It'll be the biggest thing. It'll still have a value, but it may be at a dock because once wheat gets below 59 pounds, then there starts to be a dock in the quality of that by the millers. The millers like the big plump kernels, and as wheat berries get wet and dry back down, they tend to shrink. So that affects
You know, I mean, but it's always that balancing act.
Oh yeah,
when you're talking about rain in the southern plains, you don't want to ever swear it off because you will certainly end up regretting that at some point. But yeah, as always, it can sometimes be untimely, and unfortunately to an excess. We saw some situations of flooding across the area. You never want to see that. But fortunately, I am not aware of any widespread either damage or here in north central Oklahoma, any injuries or, goodness, really, never want to see fatalities tied to it. So we're going to take the rain.
Absolutely. All
right. This is obviously benefiting just about everything.
Everything.
Our turf lawns, trees, shrubs, our gardens.
Yes. This is bringing up an instance that we normally don't have to talk about, but with the abundance of rainfall we've received this past week, a top dressing, a side dressing of our annual flowers, our blooming plants, definitely is in order. With the moisture, any available nitrogen would have been carried too deep now for those plants to latch onto, so it's time to do a side dressing there. And the same would go in our vegetable garden. This just not what we normally encounter in the first week of July, and most of us are pretty well got fertilizing off the table at this point in time in the production cycle. But I think this year, with this amount of moisture, it's definitely going to be necessary if you're growing. Let's pick on my favorite to pick on, tomatoes and pots. I mean, you know, definitely they're going to be needing a side dressing of nitrogen. And to stay on tomatoes, I've had looked at lots of tomatoes. You know, a week ago, Jay Curtis, we went through a week of weather that was seasonable. I mean, maybe even abnormal the other way.
Early.
Yeah, it happened with a lot of humidity and a lot of intense heat, and it caught a lot of us off guard. And to stay in the garden, I know that physiological leaf curl on the tomatoes, that's where they just kind of roll up and they just kind of sit there. And that's because that plant's trying to decide whether or not, if it's getting enough water, it's got too many leaves, it needs to shed a few leaves. Or is it going to come back and the temperatures moderate and then those leaves will open back up? So you have those kind of things going on. But at the same time, I had encountered some tomatoes that had that appearance, but were infected with a cucumber mosaic virus, which is spread by aphids, which kind of surprised me. I thought, oh, that's heat-related, and the pathologist says, oh, no, we found this virus.
Found the culprit.
Yeah, so as we think about tomatoes, we need to be almost on a preventative or a address the insect issues, because those pesky little guys will carry viruses from other plant material or from a infected tomato plant through all your tomatoes. So always be mindful. I love to be organic. I love to be non-invasive with any type of insecticide or herbicide or fungicide. But there's some products out there. I'm becoming a big proponent of neem oil and the use of neem as a soil drench, and that would help control the aphids as they fed on the tomato. But I just think we need to be a little more, if we're serious about our tomatoes, be a little more proactive and try to prevent some of those things from becoming a problem. And then there's some foliar diseases starting to show up, and most of us, we realize we're going to lose those bottom leaves off our tomatoes. I mean, we just, as the plant grows up, an indeterminate tomato keeps growing up, that those bottom leaves just start looking little, and they get shaded as much as anything. But what we tend to forget, those bottom leaves are where we get our soil-borne fungus invasions as we irrigate or splash water up on those leaves. And once it gets started on that leaf, it becomes a whole lot easier for it to move on up the plant, and it'll accelerate and move a lot faster as it starts getting higher up on the plant. So always be mindful and pay attention to what's going on from the tomato, from the soil surface to the top of the plant, whether it's an insect. I mean, I've picked tomato hornworms. I've kind of forgotten how prolific they can be when conditions are right. But pay attention. We'll do best we can and help you identify not necessarily prevent, but address those. Maybe a rescue treatment's a good way to say that on some of those tomato issues. Another thing in the garden, vegetables. And when I say vegetables, that's kind of a loose term, but I'm thinking of squash, which generally are plentiful, usually not a problem, but watermelons, muskmelons, but some people are saying, oh, I've got lots of flowers and I'm not setting any fruit on that vegetable. And the first thing that came to mind a week ago was the heat, but also you have to recall that there's a lot of things going on. And you have to remember, and I'm just as guilty because I have pumpkins started, there's male flowers and there's female flowers. And you really have to study. If you got a male flower, that's a pollen producer, it's not going to set a fruit. The female flower will have a small enlargement right behind it, which would be the fruit if it gets pollinated. So if you look and always the first ones you get are the males, because you want to have the pollen in the
right
environment first.
Allows them to get established.
Yeah, lets them get established and start shedding pollen. So always don't worry if the very first ones didn't make a fruit. You had to pay attention to make sure that was some female flowers, of course, won't get pollinated, but the majority will. I mean, it just, that's Mother Nature's way of controlling things. But anyhow, after you look at that, and I wouldn't want to go back to my tomatoes. Tomatoes are notorious. I mean, they just, especially the slicers, the bigger tomatoes, they are so finicky about temperature and pollen set. If it gets, and we're not into that now, but in the fall when it gets, nighttime temperatures get to 50 degrees, they won't pollinate. And in this time of year, what we worry about is those temperatures, nighttime temperatures above 75, they won't pollinate. So you have these temperature window that, that you have to have for that pollen to survive to get the fertilization to occur on the, make the fruit. As we look at other things, that I did say that was the slicers. Now, I will say those little cherry tomatoes, they're a lot more durable. They will pollinate at higher temperatures and at lower temperatures, so it's easier to grow cherry tomatoes, but a lot of folks, that's not their desire. They want that great big slicer that they can...
Well, some cherry tomatoes, great.
But oh, yeah.
Going, if I'm going to slice that up, going, I'm going to need like 32 slices for a sandwich.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not practical.
Not practical at all. But anyway, the other thing about a tomato, and I just mentioned that I think we're going to have to do a little fertilization because of the rainfall, such a deluge, big amount, large amount. But if we get carried away and we apply too much nitrogen, a tomato loves to be vegetative. It loves to grow and be green.
You're going to have a heck of a tomato plant.
Yeah. I mean, vegetation occurs when there's ample or above needed fertilization. Reproduction occurs whenever that's passed and it says, oh, I better start making fruit because we're starting to run out of nutrients. So there's that in the way Mother Nature tells a tomato to respond. So you can't over-fertilize and you can get a tomato to get too leggy, too tall. But it's just a balancing act, getting it enough to keep it healthy, keep it alive and growing and producing fruit. And then when it happens is when we get through this, if the nitrogen and all the fertilizer leached through the soil, went too deep, your fruit will be small. And you'll say, well, why can't I grow a big tomato? Well, the first answer is probably fertility. And so it's just kind of a balancing act. You just need to be careful with that as you go through it. I wanted to mention a few things about pests. Japanese beetles, that's things that's kind of in a garden starting to show up in large numbers. Adults are almost a half an inch long, and they're usually metallic green. And you'll start to see them under your lights, street lights or outside lights.
Yeah, they look like a metallic green June bug.
Yeah, exactly. And so this what's what you see. And they feed on, where I start getting calls is they love to feed on fruit. And we're not quite there, but we soon will be. And the best way to control them on fruit is preventative. Either cover the tree. I've even heard of people covering each individual apple or pear or peach. With a sack of some kind, just to create a isolationism, keep the insect from being able to get to it. Insecticides are tough because these are tough beetles. I mean, it takes a lot of product to kill one, so he's done a lot of damage before you get him controlled. So that's always a problem. Japanese beetles tend to fall off real easy. Shake them off, take them into a sack, tie up the sack, and get disposed of it that way.
See, I think it's just because as they look, yeah, they've got some of that. They're Japanese beetles. That's like samurai armor, that metallic green.
But there are insecticides that'll control them. The pyrethrins, they're things that are very safe. They may have a 2 or 3 day withdrawal time before harvest. Just kind of be mindful. Read those product labels. And
I don't know, speaking of those, I didn't see like a lot of June bugs this year. And I know we're going into July. Are they potentially going to show up later, or do you have any idea?
Well, the June bug relates back to that lawn grub that we always
right
see damage from. And yes, I think that not to say that it impacted them other than a delay. That real cold February time period, I think, may have slowed that up 10 days or so, like it's done so many other
things. Well, memo to June bugs, if you're going to come out this year, you're late.
Memo.
Yeah, June's in the rearview mirror.
Yeah.
You're working on being July bugs now. So
the thing about the grubs in the lawn, the larval stage of June bugs, now's a great time. Right now is a great time to put down some grub preventers. They are starting to migrate close to their feeding, getting closer and closer to the soil surface, especially as the soils warm up. And now's when you can put down those grub preventers, and those are easier on the environment, and control those, and yet not be as...
Now, typically, does that come granular form, a powder, liquid that you dilute?
You can either be a granular or a powder. Can be a liquid, spray it on, and you know, you hope for rain for incorporation. So
yeah, okay,
and it works great.
All right,
pay attention to those guys because they can do a lot of damage. And one thing I'm kind of getting off on the safer things, I guess, is what everybody likes to call them, insecticidal soaps. And I did a little digging on that because a lot of people are. And you can find whatever you want to find on the internet. Whatever your story is and you want to believe it, you can find it.
Right.
And so as you look at that, I've been told so many times that, well, all you have to use is dishwashing soap. Dishwashing soap, dishwashing soap, dishwashing
sure,
soap.
Sure, you've heard, yeah.
And yes, but, you know, I mean, always see the bigger picture. And I just wanted to talk about insecticidal soaps for just a minute. Because we can go to the garden centers and we can find
the garden house,
and or box store, and you can actually find insecticidal soaps. And the one thing I want to talk about there is they are definitely reduced risk insecticides. They leave minimal, almost nil residues. There is, never say no toxicity, but they are the least toxic to humans.
Okay. Positives all so
far. All positives, yeah, great things. And they biodegrade rapidly. When you think of soaps, they deteriorate.
They do their job and go away.
Yeah.
Okay.
But just to talk about them just a minute, there's two things that make this happen. There's sodium or potassium. Sodium is hard soap. And potassium is soft soap, and they're both tied to a hydroxy fatty acid chain. And that's, we're getting off into chemistry now, and everybody says, oh, I don't care. But long chain fatty acids is what true insecticidal soaps are. And they do their thing in controlling insects. But when you look at these other soaps, and I'm not trying to promote any particular brand, but an Ivory soap or a Dawn dishwashing soap,
right,
those type of products, they are shorter chain. They are usually 9 fatty acids to a chain, where these others are 18. So you think of them, they're half strength, maybe. That'd be a way to describe them. But they still work. And there was some research or some observation work done in Kansas about these, and of course they're unlabeled insecticides, so when you think of it, they don't have a label. No one says they're going to work. It's one of those, oh yeah, this will do, this will control it, but it doesn't have a label to do it. And these products, the thing about those are they work best on nymphs. I mean, the smaller the better. And the thing about the soaps is you have to get in direct contact. You have to get it on them. So, and the fact is that you're going to be making a 2-3% soap solution in a spray bottle.
Right.
You can do this multiple times a day if you choose, or at least, you know, at least daily. Think of it that way, where most insecticides you think is longer time spans. But the thing that impacts, this is the one thing, as we see it, we're dealing with the product that's on the market for other reasons than insecticides. But when they introduce a new dishwashing detergent, there's always a new color, there's always a new fragrance, and every time you do things like that to that product, it becomes less effective on insects. So you know, what you have used is, I'll just pick on Dawn dishwashing soap, in the original one versus the newest one that may be a different color and have a different smell.
Right. You got, because it was cool, the tropical fruit punch dawn or
whatever.
Going, oh, it's red and it smells like tropical fruit punch. But, all right.
But those will, as we do more and more things to the soap, to actually make it appealing to us, it becomes less effective to control insecticides.
Less soap, actually.
So when you think of that, you know, those are the things that happen in trying to use dishwashing soaps or laundry soaps. But they will work. I get into a lot of debates. You know, people say, oh, that's the only thing to use. Well, yeah, it will work. It doesn't have a label. You have to be real persistent. I mean, you could be out there multiple times a day versus using a true insecticidal soap, maybe just once a day or every other day.
Notice, in its name, insecticidal soap, not dish soap.
Exactly.
So it does make a claim towards some efficacy, so keep that in mind. Now, before we run out of time on this Saturday, I noticed it seems like we're seeing an above average leaf drop from various kinds in what appears to be healthy trees. I was talking with my sister not too long ago. She just mentioned it offhand. She's going, I don't know why so many leaves are dropping.
Yeah, that is an observation. And it's not
so
just
what's
from...
up?
Well, if we'll go back a week ago or 10 days ago now, we went through what is a warmer, more humid time period in there from about 3 to 4 or 5 days.
Yes, it was brutal.
It was brutal. And right, and then it turned off. But what I'm saying is Mother Nature and those trees and maples, what I've noticed is maples and a few oaks, especially.
Yeah, that's what would have been involved here.
Okay. They normally produce more leaves than they need.
Sure.
I mean, it's early, it's great, things are good, you know, that's just what Mother Nature's way is. And we get to that brutal time period
earlier.
Earlier in the season, and that tree says, "Oh my goodness, this is late July and it feels like late July and I've got too many leaves." And it goes through the process. In that process, it receives the signal,
right?
Because of the environment, and then it says, "I've got to make changes," and it's to shut down and say, "We've got to shed some leaves because we've got too many anyway. We're losing too much moisture through transpiration."
Okay.
And so these leaves then, just it can look like fall. I mean, you can get up the next morning and just your yard is covered in leaves. They may have a little browning around the edges where They have scorched because the heat, the tree can't translocate enough moisture up there to keep that leaf full and green. And so Mother Nature and the tree have said, hey, we got to cut, you know, 20.
Can't save them all.
Can't save them all. Let's let 30% of them go. And so,
okay.
Yes, and you'll see that fall. And this has been to both mature trees and to newly planted trees. I mean, it's not specific just to trees you planted this year. But... the biggest thing is take a deep breath and don't forget your, now we're past that, but the watering scheme, you know, I mean, don't forget trees 2 or 3 years planted, they still need a little additional water. And think about that through your watering scheme to keep those trees feeling good about
themselves. And if you're going, but I've just really been noticing it here lately, I assume from the effects and the actions of the tree, there was going to be a little bit of lag time.
Absolutely.
It recognizes the weather that is not conducive to keeping all the leaves. It starts to shut down and do the rest. Well, by that time, we've
moved into a wet period again.
The heat spell may have already broken, but they've kind of shut it down. And then, okay, all right. Well, no, we're okay. We can start it back up.
You may see trees put out another flush of leaves, and it depends how quick the heat comes back. They may not, because, like you said, it is a lag period experience.
Right. Oh, and if they do, joy of joys. That means even more leaves to rake up this winter.
Yes, sir.
Because everything that grows, it's going to drop, so... All right, well, Rick, you know, it's been a busy and interesting late June and early July certainly have gotten the moisture that we need.
Yes, sir.
Which is always a good deal. So, if people have any questions, issues, whether it's about bugs or things in the yard and garden, they can always contact you all at the Garfield County OSU Extension Office during regular business hours, Monday through Friday. Think about 8:30 to 4:30. It's probably a pretty good time, and I know that you can help them out. So, as always, appreciate your time.
Always enjoy the opportunity, Jay Curtis.
And enjoy the rest of your 4th of July
weekend. All right, sir.
You want your landscaping to be beautiful, but you have no idea what plants or bushes to choose. No worries. Just stop by Garden House in Enid. You'll get the professional knowledge you need to make sure your yard is perfect. They're experts, and that's what they do. Get inspired at the Garden House.